My guest today is Rob Moore, who is an entrepreneur, investor, author of 6 Amazon and Audible bestsellers, prolific podcaster, 2-time public speaking world record holder, and he's the founder of the Rob Moore Foundation as well. Rob is a self-made multimillionaire, and he achieved this by the age of 30, having been heavily in debt in his 20s. Rob co-founded Progressive Property, which is the UK's leading property training company, and Unlimited Success with his business partner before he became the host of the podcast The Disruptive Entrepreneur and also The Money Podcast. And personally for me, Rob has changed my life through his books, especially a book called Life Leverage and a book called Start Now, Get Perfect Later. And also during the 2020 summer of lockdown, I did Rob's podcast course, and that helped me get my podcast up and running from an idea to an awesome project, which I love. So please enjoy my conversation with Rob. So first question, Rob, is just to give a bit of context to everything. How did you first get started in business? Like, what was your first big kind of foray into the business world?
So how I got into business and my first big foray are two different things, I would say. Okay. I got into business because on December the 15th, 2005, my dad had a massive nervous breakdown in his pub. Broke down in front of all of his customers, got beaten up and arrested by the police and sectioned. And this all happened very publicly. And I felt a lot of intense shame. And I was nearly 26, going nowhere, living in my dad's pub still, earning hardly any money, not doing anything with my life. Kind of letting my dad down, really, because he'd always raised me to be entrepreneurial and it got me involved at a young age working and always supported me and paid my way through school and uni, first car, first house, you know, was always looked after by my dad. And I know now I wasn't responsible, but I felt partly responsible. So when that happened, I knew I had to, I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't know how I was going to do it, but I knew that I had to face my fears, I suppose, get over myself and start pursuing seriously being an entrepreneur, running my own business. That almost kicked off a chain reaction. Looking back, it was literally like it was a domino chain reaction effect, because I can track back a week later, I went to my first property networking event, never wanted to go to any of those, hated them. I met my business partner, Mark Homer, with who I'm still business partners with today. He blagged me my first non-family job in a property company where we learned the ropes of property investing. We bought 20 deals together, Mark and I, in that first year, give or take. We bought another 30 the next year and set up the now what is now the UK's largest property training company, Progressive Property. So that was my foray into business and entrepreneurship. And maybe the biggest deal I've ever done is getting in partnership with Mark Homer, my business partner. I mean, we have 1,200 units of property under management, ownership and development in our 3 main property businesses, companies. We've done 150 million plus in information-based content, selling courses, etc. for real estate and property. I've written 18 books and some of those have been with Mark. We're doing a 20-odd million, probably $25 million, 100-unit conversion right now. So my biggest or bigger foray into business is definitely my partnership with Mark.
And you feel you can trace that back to your dad's heart attack?
Well, it was a nervous breakdown. So he was diagnosed with bipolar disorder or manic depression. I think that was the first domino. I do think it was, yeah. I mean, you could argue, I suppose, entrepreneurship was in me because my dad had raised me to be an entrepreneur because he was an entrepreneur and took me around all the pubs and bars and clubs he was buying. I was just talking to my sister's husband, who's known my dad for 30 years, and said, you know, your dad never did anything the easy way. And there was always some new pub or some new scheme or some new business or some new hustle. So I think that's probably where it was developed. I mean, I'm not great with authority. I'm definitely a rebel. you know, there's some people that say, learn the rules, then break the rules. I fucking love breaking the rules. My show is called The Disruptive Entrepreneur. I like to do things a bit different. That's probably, I mean, so part of that was my dad, because my dad's the biggest rebel you've ever met. But a lot of that, I guess, is just who I am.
Yeah. And was your dad all right after that? How did he recover from all that?
He's still around. So, you know, I'm grateful for that. He's in his late 70s now and he's still around, but it's fucking hard. And he's going through another sort of my mum calls it an episode. And these can last weeks or 2 years, you know, when he's not level. He's either, you know, manic or depressed, hence manic depression. And, you know, smoking 100 fags a day. And this is actually quite funny, but he just got a lifetime ban from Sainsbury's. He's caused so much fucking trouble in there, nicking stuff and pissing off the staff. And he's awarded a lifetime ban for Sainsbury's, which kind of sums my dad up. He's quite a funny bastard in a lot of ways, but, you know, you've got to look at away the light side of it, haven't you?
Yeah. Well, I think for me, I remember watching this Tony Robbins documentary, the one on Netflix, and I had never had a great relationship with my dad, and it was always about trying to do everything that he didn't do, and just, I don't want to grow up and be like exactly like my dad. But I watched that Tony Robbins documentary, and I remember making a list in my journal of the positive things that my dad had that I also had. So a bit of confidence, a bit of a smile, you know, physical endurance, pretty fit, always been into sports and stuff. And then I realized that the majority of my good characteristics are actually from my dad. So it's interesting as you get older that you think how you perceive and reflect on the traits you get from your parents.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what I think about that. I think it's fucking hard parenting. I'm a parent. I've got a 10-year-old and a 6-year-old. And look, I was talking to my wife today, and she thinks I'm pretty good at moving on from things. And I like to think I am. And I don't blame my parents for anything. I mean, you know, they had a freaking hard job raising me and my sister. It's just damn hard being a parent. And I look back at my mum and dad and I think they did a bloody awesome job. And maybe any things that are good about me, they can take credit for. And maybe any things that aren't good about me, they could disown. I've definitely got some traits of my dad, but I'm definitely also my own person. And I mean, my dad, oh man, you've never seen anyone who can deal with conflict. And I mean, he once took on this pub in Peterborough, like a full-on pub for the, you know, the roughest, hardest people in the whole city. One woman used to come and she had a massive scar down her neck, and she had, I think, 3 or 4 kids, and she'd just bring in her kids in that were only young and stick them in the beer garden all afternoon while she'd drink 12 bottles of White Lightning cider or whatever. And, you know, her boyfriend she's with had put that scar all the way down her neck by cutting her. And my dad took over this pub and he got it cheap because no one wanted it. And he fucking systematically barred everybody, squared up to them all, fought them all, headbutted one of them. I saw him slam someone again. I mean, back then, my dad was 60, you know, not 25. And, oh, man, I've never seen anyone can deal with conflict like him. I mean, to the degree where he would get too angry. I've had to learn conflict. It's not my natural thing. I don't like it. I'd normally shy away from it. And I've had business has taught me that. So that's definitely a trait I admire in my dad to a point, and I don't have, that I had to learn. So I think we are our own unique individual. It's good that you went through that process. One of my mentors, John DeMartini, he does the breakthrough experience, and he gets you to view a person who you're holding some emotional baggage to and basically come up with a load of upsides for the situation and how that has served you. You know, and so any resentment or issues or whatever someone has towards their parents is because they're only seeing the downside. And when you see the balanced upside and you put everything into balance, which is what my dad doesn't have with bipolar, he doesn't have balance. He has really massive emotional range, which is actually really unhealthy. Anyway, yeah, just some thoughts.
Yeah, fascinating. Seeing life through someone else's eyes almost and perceiving it how they perceive it. Do you do that like just in your head or journaling? Like, what's the best way or how does that exercise kind of work?
Yeah, I think journaling is good. I mean, look, first off, that kind of exercise, what's the purpose of it? The purpose of seeing the balance in everything is to stop you being volatile and extreme. And volatile and extreme emotions will make your life more difficult. You'll resist the universal laws. And like for wealth, for example, volatile emotions will erode wealth. Volatile emotions will erode relationships. And volatile emotions are when you're only seeing one side of a two-sided whole, whether it's elation or depression. So if you're the sort of person that gets elated and depressed, if you've been doing that long enough, you'll have some experience to see the downsides of both. Because, you know, we all want to feel good, don't we? But elation, the extreme high, you make flippant decisions, bad financial decisions, you spend money you haven't got, you know, you say things you don't mean. I think you should never make a promise when you're high. You get yourself in a lot of trouble. So writing, if you're experiencing mania, extreme emotions, high or low, wisdom is in seeing the other side. So wisdom is in seeing the balanced view. So for example, when business has been really good for us, we've not tracked our KPIs as much. We've not thoroughly analyzed the balance sheet. We've just gone, and the profit and loss have just gone, yeah, fucking loads of profit, great. And there's been issues that have been bubbling that we've missed because things have been good and we haven't had enough pain to analyze them. And I almost said to my business partners, I said, we should probably analyze those profit and loss and those management accounts more when we're good than when we're bad. So you tend to behave a certain way when things are good and behave a certain way when things are bad. But if you can balance those out. Now, what most people, they perceive things are worse than they are. So the trick is to see all the good, all the upside, all the lessons, all the wisdom that you're gaining, all the new opportunities, because a challenge is essentially an opportunity. And we can all do this with hindsight. So everyone has wisdom 10 years ago. Like if everyone listening thinks of the worst relationship they ever had that was 5 years ago or more, I bet you they can see some upsides in it or they got some lessons from it. They might have even forgiven themselves or the person. They might have even seen their own role in that situation instead of just blaming the individual. You've been in relationships where you thought you'd never get out or that it would never be good. And then you've got out and then you look back. And so I do this in my head because every day, 50 times a day, I'm like, man, that's a challenge. Got to deal with that. Oh, that's difficult. Oh, you know, that wasn't how I expected it. As you go, right, what's the upside? What's the lesson? What's the universe trying to teach me? What am I not seeing? What delusion did I create? What fantasy did I create that gave me an inaccurate context? Because if you think about the world, it is only how it is. It shouldn't have been anything. It is what it is. So when you go, it should have been, it would have been, it could have been, I wanted it to be, it wasn't. You're creating a fantasy, a delusion. And therefore, the bigger the contrast, the bigger the difference between reality and fantasy, the more the pain. So, you know, we were talking before air about you starting your podcast. Now, if I had said to you that everybody who does my podcast course is a millionaire within a year, you'd be beating yourself up going, man, I should have started mine earlier. If I said to you, most people don't get started for 2 or 3 years because life gets in the way, you'd be feeling pretty good about where you're at. Why? Because you're comparing it to something. So we need to be wise with the comparisons that we make, which is why they say comparison is the thief of joy.
Do you think that's a natural human thing to do? Like, do you think you can, is there a positive of comparison?
Well, it can drive you and motivate you. It can create a void that you're trying to fill. It can push work ethic and relentlessness and drive and hunger. It can bridge the gap from where you are to where you want to be. Yeah, it can do all that, but you've got to be able to balance that, because otherwise you could be perennially empty, which, you know, a lot of us are driven by our voids. You know, you'd have been driven by certain voids created with your relationship with your dad, for example. We pursue the things we never had or we lost or we desired that we, you know, so there's a certain amount of drive comes from void. It's just, it makes, are you a master of it or are you a slave to it?
And which part of you is watching? I suppose that's why journaling is so important, to go, oh, actually, that's what I perceive that to be. I remember there was a gym down the road that I used to be always looking at their social media of, and eventually when I realized I was actually jealous of them and shouldn't be hating on them, I should actually be seeing, well, how they're actually doing that. Yeah, how could I do that with my own business? Then that's when things took off for me. Using envy as a bit of a tool and reflecting on that.
Well, that's wisdom to say use envy as a tool, i.e. envy doesn't rule me, I rule envy. That's wisdom. Maybe transcendences don't even feel envy.
Yeah.
Always a new level.
Yeah, I'm going to change it now. I've got more questions, just to run through a couple more. So personally, one of the things I wanted to ask you was, since, you know, had my own business for over 10 years, I initially started just after uni. So you can imagine the type of house I was living in with, you know, a load of lads and everything. When I first started my gym, it was in a tiny little storage container and it looked like a shed, and it had literally homemade sandbags and pieces of crap equipment, just the only things I could afford. And I'd go home every day and my friends would make fun of me, and eventually got to the point where I just thought, you know what, I don't need to be around these people. And I made the choice to move in with a friend who is more positive, and that was a massive change in my environment. So that really helped me believe in myself a lot more, to not have people, you know, it's only banter from your mates, but when it's every day, sometimes it does get to you, right? Have you had situations in your life where you've drifted away from people or cut people out from your life? And what do you recommend people do if they're in those sorts of situations?
I've not got a strong view on this, which surprises a lot of people. Of course, I subscribe to hang around people who are champions of you, who are going to lift you up, who are positive and energizing. I'm definitely a subscriber to that. And I know when I've hung around people that haven't been good for me. Let's call it that. Because people are only doing the best with who they are and what they know. And we shouldn't look down on other people. I'm not saying that's what you do, but there is sometimes a bit of snobbery around, oh, well, you know, I've got to be around like-minded positive people. And
okay, let me twist the question a little bit then. Have you lost touch with good friends because you've been too focused on business at any point in your
life? Yeah. 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 And you know what? The best way to let the wrong people go in your life, or the people that don't serve you the most, is just be so fucking busy you can't keep in touch with them. It's not sending them a WhatsApp voice memo going, you're negative, fuck off. You know, you're banned from friendship. So here's the thing. I'm a Liverpool fan, and Jurgen Klopp is smart in building a team, and he's got a lot of different types of players. And you have a defensive holding midfielder, you know, and you have an attacking midfielder. And, you know, his front three are all a bit different. And he's got a front three, not a front one. And, you know, if the reserve goalie is too good, he'll leave. So he's good, but he's not great. And the subs have got to be good, but Messi's never going to sit on the bench. I think that analogy, if it's landed, is the same with your circle. You actually do need a few people who push your buttons and call your bullshit. And that is not negativity, that is honesty. So you need a couple of honest people. Now, too much of that, it's like, leave us alone. You need an energetic, inspired, enthusiastic person or people. You need a mentor who's been there for 50 or 60 years. You probably need a grumpy old git that's seen everything, and you probably need a really motivated, enthused person. You need people who'll support you and people who'll challenge you. The world will give you equal support and challenge. So you need to probably have around you people who equally support and challenge. You need some like-minded people to feel like you're like, but you also need some people who aren't like you minded, because they're bigger than you and they're crazier than you. So I'm not a subscriber to having one certain type of person around you. I think that's an ego play. So it's a little bit more technical than just, you know, hang around inspiring people or hang around like-minded people. I've thought about this a lot over the years. And the hardest thing to do is hang around with people who will challenge you and call you out on your bullshit. But you've got to respect and admire them, or at least value their opinion. And if you don't value their opinion and they're doing that and you're not offering that advice up, or, you know, you're not giving them the opinion, the permission to do that, you need to get rid of them. You know, I'm a bit of a romantic and I don't really like losing people in my life. But there's 7 billion people on this planet and we're going to bump into a few of them and we're going to lose more of them. And I'm a bit more keen now on letting people go and being less romantic about it. Because I'll tell you why. Mostly it's a practical thing. Time. You know, we all love a good fucking moan. I like a good moan. I like to pretend I don't and I'm really positive, but I like a good moan. Who doesn't? Who doesn't want to set up a pity party on the things that are pissing them off and light a fire and have everyone sit around with the marshmallows and listen to your pity party? But honestly, I'm 42 and I ain't got time for that shit anymore. If I want to build an empire, make a difference, make money, inspire a billion people, no time for that shit. No time for hanger-oners, cling-oners, people who want to take the piss out of you, abuse you, use you. I've had all of that, by the way. Gone. Got to be gone.
Yeah, and I've had a similar situation where I've surrounded myself with... I've probably got a similar view to you. I don't think I've surrounded myself with a positive group of people. I've accumulated one or two really good mates from doing this for like over 10 years. You know what I mean? So now I've got some mates who run gyms who I can have a bit of a moan with, and they'll say, "Aren't you being a dick? You know, give me some brutal honesty." And then I'm able to go home to my girlfriend and not put that on her. I, you know, I've had the moan, I've had the honest feedback and whatever, and I can go home and be separate from that and actually be a supportive person, you know, in my relationship. So I think that something that I've underestimated is the importance of having some good mates who can see things through your eyes, but also aren't afraid of giving you a kick up the ass and giving you that support, but in a kind of a, like you said, like a team sports kind of way. Like, I'm from rugby background. It was, you never had an emotional conversation in rugby. It's all banter, you know, and the point comes across through taking the piss out of people, I suppose.
Yeah.
With your physical health, is there anything that you do to kind of maintain that that came out of necessity? Like, did you ever get to the point where you were stressed, for example, and not looking after yourself? Have you had any issues with that?
What, because I'm such a Greek statue example? Just interested to know. look, I always honour the things I don't know. And, you know, I'm in all right shape, but I'm not, you know, I'm not a Greek statue. I can tell you, I'll tell you things that made a difference to my energy. That's probably good because I'm not a personal trainer. I'm not a dietitian. The biggest things that made a difference to my energy, because by the way, you can be healthy and energetic and not necessarily that fit or strong. And I think there's a difference, and obviously both are ideal. But, you know, Warren Buffett's 85 and he's still kicking out. Charlie Munger's 90-odd, you know, these top billionaires, and they've still got it.
Yes, vitality.
Exactly. Life force, energy, vitality, health. That's not necessarily strength. So giving up alcohol, single best thing I ever did for my energy. Single best thing. Got a day and a half, 2 days of my week back, done. And you only realize the clarity of mind you didn't have when you fully stop. I only ever drunk to get really drunk and to have banter with my mates. And, you know, when I had who is now my wife, there's no need for that environment. And when I'm a business owner and those kind of friends aren't the people I'd necessarily hang around with, it wasn't needed anymore. That was the single biggest thing. I actually think, I mean, there's a lot of science and research on these two things. I'm not going to say that I knew this and try and claim it, but 15 years ago plus, way before any proper science and research was out, I really believed it was important to get a decent amount of sleep. And I really thought it was important to not be too stressed. I saw what stress did to my dad. And so doing some tests and working out what your ideal sleep routine and pattern is. And now, of course, you can have all these apps and stuff, can't you, where you can really, really examine and biohack your sleep. And I think that's a good thing. I don't need any of that shit. I just know how I feel in the morning when I wake up. And by the way, I sounded there like I'm a 70-year-old guy who doesn't have apps on his phone. But trust how you feel as well as what a fucking app says about how long you've been in deep sleep or whatever. So I know how I feel when I get up. And for me, ideal is 9:30 to 10, wake up 5:15 to 5:45. That's the range. I've tested it a load and that's the range. So sleep, no alcohol, or look, one drink every now and again, you know, I'm not preaching. You asked me. And then I think actually the biggest creator of dis-ease is probably stress. Probably. Because from I've done a lot of research on people like Joe Dispenza, who's done even more research than me, and it seems that it is stress that can trigger latent hereditary potential conditions in the body and, you know, what it does to the body. One of my mentors says that disease, which means dis-ease, is your body's way of giving you feedback that something is out of balance in your body. Otherwise, how else would you know? And he even says if it's in certain places, it can relate to certain emotions. Like if there's ailments of the knee or the foot, it can relate to certain types of, because he was a doctor for many years. So probably worry less, sleep more, drink less. And I'm just going to say it. I didn't say it for 15 years doing all these interviews and I thought it, and I'm just going to fucking say it. Getting fucked regularly, lots of sex, fucking how you like it with who you like. The world is so fucking awesome when you have that intimate connection with another human being. I was a bit crude there, but when you've had a really stressful day in the office, really stressful, there's nothing better than bending your wife over. I'm sorry, but it's fucking awesome. And it just makes everything feel great. And honestly, a load of haters who are sitting there trolling everyone online all day, every day, if they just got laid a few more times, there'd be less trolling in the world. I might create this butterfly effect of positivity. Go home and bend your missus over and the world is a better place.
Yeah, I love it. Honestly, I love that you brought that up because I've taken a group of guys through some mindset and relationship stuff and I recommended this book and it was all about mindset, and one of the last chapters was about bending your wife over. And so this guy who I've been helping, he's got a load of corporate clients and he sent loads of people this book, not having got to the sex bit. And they're all messaging about, why have you sent me a book about sex? And I just find it fascinating that it is a taboo thing, yet we all want more of it, right? Isn't that odd?
Yeah, it's not. It's never been taboo in my life because I've been fucking obsessed about it. But, you know, I don't do any relationship advice. But if I were to give some suggestions to some, not necessarily just women, but men as well, you know, give your partner intimate connection, because that's ultimately what it is. It's internet connect, intimacy and connection. I just said internet connection. Maybe that is for some people what sex is about.
That's the backup.
Yeah, exactly. Intimacy and connection. I think it could help a lot. And, you know, the world's going to put a lot of curveballs in front of us. It's going to make life hard. And we all need to feel loved and important. So, yeah, they're probably the four. Alcohol, sleep, stress, and then intimacy.
Love it. And that's half an hour, boss. I think you've got to go. Let's end on that. Thanks so much, mate, for doing this. Awesome advice.
Always a pleasure, never a chore.
Yes, dude. Well, thank you.
Catch you later.
See ya.